welcome to another episode of Disrupt. I'm Joyce Fumakinwa with Home Healthcare News. Before we jump into my conversation with Tricia Chrisman, Vice President and COO of the Home Care and Hospice Division at Common Spirit Health at Home, I want to give a shout out to our podcast sponsor, Home Care Home Base, whose powerful cloud-based home health software streamlines virtually every aspect of your business. Spend less time on paperwork and more time delivering quality care to patients who need you. Visit hchb.com to learn more. During this conversation, which took place in late November, I spoke to Tricia about the company's on-the-ground experience with COVID-19, especially as we settle into flu season. We also spoke about the financial impact of COVID-19. Plus, as the year comes to a close, we touched on lessons learned from the public health emergency and the company's goals for next year. So let's get into it. Today we have Trish Chrisman, Vice President and CEO of the Home Care and Hospice Division at Common Spirit Health at Home. Trish, Common Spirit is headquartered in Ohio, but where are you joining us from today?
Thanks, Joyce, for having me with you. I, like many people across the country, am working remotely, and I'm joining you from my home office outside of Milwaukee, Wisconsin today.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining us. For our listeners that aren't familiar with Common Spirit Health at Home, tell us a bit about your company.
Sure. Common Spirit Health at Home has been providing home-based healthcare for over 40 years through specialized home care, home infusion, hospice, medical transportation services across the country. As you mentioned, we're headquartered in Milford, Ohio, and we're currently comprised of 70 locations across 13 states and nearly 3,000 employees. Last February of 2019, CHI Health at Home transitioned to what we call now Common Spirit Health at Home as our two larger parent organizations aligned our ministries to form Common Spirit Health. As a result of Catholic Health Initiatives and Dignity Health aligning, Common Spirit Health became the largest nonprofit health care system in the country, and currently operates in more than 700 care sites and 142 hospitals across the country. And the combined system has about 150,000 employees and 25,000 physicians and advanced practice clinicians.
Well, thank you for kind of walking us through that background and giving us the history of the company. For most home-based care companies, at this point, COVID-19 has become the new normal, so to speak. What is Common Spirit Health at Home experiencing on the ground almost 10 months into this?
Right. So I would definitely say, Joyce, that we're seeing patients and families have a heightened and new level of expectation for their care in their home or their place of residence. We're really seeing that they have become more accustomed to the role that technology plays in their care, which is refreshing. We're seeing patients become more involved in their health and safety and becoming more involved in opportunities to collaborate in their plan of care with providers. We still are seeing, and I think we'll see this for quite a long time to come, that patients in congregate living environments were still having a difficult time and experiencing challenges related to access to those patients. I would also add that our clinicians are increasingly becoming more comfortable with the use of technology as well, and kind of understanding that remote patient monitoring and telehealth visits are powerful tools that can help keep our patients and our employees safe, as well as obviously to conserve scarce PPE. I'm really proud of the way that our teams have continued to say yes to their calling in this kind of new normal state. I think we've gotten beyond a place where we think it's going to go back to normal. I think we're kind of resolved that this is a new way of existing, and we're kind of leaning and continuing to lean into what's happening across our country and our world. I'd also kind of lastly add this in this new normal, I think our operators and our clinical leaders are responding more quickly to the day-to-day needs and requirements of the business. So, you know, that kind of agility and quick responsiveness is a normal part of kind of a heightened pace of our day and our week and our month. things change daily and it's requiring a higher level of awareness and readiness to be successful. So that's a kind of a new part of our world today.
So staying on this topic, what COVID-19 mitigation protocols and processes does your organization have in place right now?
So right from the very beginning and continuing to current state, you know, mitigating the risk posed to our employees and our patients and ensuring their safety has been a Herculean effort. The critical thinking and decision-making that drove our behaviors and continue to drive our behaviors and influence PPE procurement and the conservation of that PPE was and remains a delicate balancing act, especially now as we're looking into this resurgence and really trying to predict what our needs are. You know, our employees are our most precious and valuable resource, and without them, our ministry can't continue. So we continue to have this top of mind and forefront every day, all day long. We've been evolving our protocols, it feels like almost daily, but as needed, related to things such as the screening and tracking of symptoms daily and the pre-screening of patients and caregivers prior to visits. PPE monitoring and procurement, as I mentioned, and the use of, we developed kind of a custom calculator projecting needed supplies based on current usage. It's been really powerful. We've implemented ExactCare, which is a medication management program. Of course, we're using Zoom for clinicians and associates across the board and to a certain extent for telehealth visits. And then, of course, implementing remote patient monitoring. I think I would also name, you know, the shifting of our workforce to become literally 99% remote and doing that virtually overnight, that had a significant impact on our operations and sorting through that technology need. But, you know, it's been, again, this is a part of our new normal and we've gotten really adept at working remotely and have done that very successfully. I think we've also, lastly here, fast tracking and the kind of this complete transformation that we've gone through for ourselves. I just say that in this current state, you know, we're more agile. I think we're a stronger organization and relying on one another more effectively. I think we're definitely leaner, more productive. We're better communicators. And certainly now we're more technologically astute. So I'd name all of those pieces as really important factors.
Something that you touched on, telehealth. That has been a big part of your organization's strategy this year, using telehealth in particular to deliver care. Can you walk me through the past several months when it comes to this and what have been the results of these efforts?
Sure. I would start off by saying that our rollout of telehealth solution was incredibly rapid, but the preparation for it was really long. We've known all along as an organization that telehealth would be an important offering for the future. And our plan was to walk slowly into telehealth with a kind of a plan to implement over the course of 18 months across all of our locations. And that was kind of solidly in place last fall, early winter. Unfortunately, we had already been through the IT security review and legal contractual work. So we were planning to do a pilot, work out the kinks over 5 months, and then COVID hit. So remarkably, my team did a phenomenal job just responding to this huge lift, and we altered our plan, skipped the pilot completely, and rolled out in 27 markets in literally 2 weeks. Through this process, we've kind of expanded our original inclusion criteria to allow for patients that did not want our clinicians in their home due to COVID concerns. So we've added that. We've seen that we've had a really strong adoption of remote patient monitoring by both staff and patients. It's taken us a little bit longer to adopt to the use of virtual visits. So we did spend a lot of time helping clinicians get comfortable with remote visits, and we're prepared for its kind of increased use as we see this resurgence. But to date, I would share that we've done over 3,700 virtual visits and have had 2,700 patients on remote patient monitoring since the beginning of the pandemic. And this is just a little bit over, under a quarter of our overall home health census. From an outcome standpoint, we've been able to decrease our in-person nursing visits and to increase capacity to care for other patients, which is an outstanding byproduct, but trying to drive capacity. But outcomes for our remote patient monitoring patients are better than those without remote patient monitoring. even though those patients have a higher acuity level, which is interesting to know. And it's been really surprising for us that, kind of related to patient satisfaction scores, that thus far our telehealth patients are 43% happier than those without telehealth. So there's some sort of, you know, ability to feel like you're in control of your care and you're in control of your environment and you're participating at a higher level when you're engaged in telehealth as a patient, that's contributing to this higher patient satisfaction score. So it's really encouraging right out of the gate.
Yeah, I think that 2020 has been, you know, the year of telehealth by necessity. So I feel like many providers have kind of really embraced it more than in the past.
Absolutely.
So how is your organization handling the surge of COVID-19 while also dealing with the possibility of an influx of flu cases?
Right, the perfect storm that we're expecting, right? So I think I would name first our partner health systems are laser focused on this right now. And they've been reaching out to us for solutions daily around plans to assist them with early discharge, admission from the ED, recovery at home, you know, all of which is to improve capacity for the influx of, you know, both COVID and flu cases that we're expecting. We've become a part of the COVID-19 task force teams within the hospitals and our partners. And our solutions have, in most cases, already been activated and quickly stood up. We've started COVID-19 testing at home, and we send COVID patients home with or without home care on telehealth for daily O2 sat and temp monitoring. We may start completing remdesivir infusions at home for stable patients. And we have a really strong pharmacy solution that's sending prepackaged medications to patients' home along with doing, you know, kind of remote pharmacist med reconciliation. I'd say for those patients with delayed elective surgeries, we're also offering, you know, a pre-care, a new solution to reduce debility, reduce comorbid exacerbation, and improve post-op outcomes. We also have created a kind of a handoff for patients stable enough to discharge from home health, but still needing monitoring so we can create home health capacity. You know, all of this applies for COVID-19 patients as well as those with flu diagnoses. But, you know, I think we have a care continuum that provides these options using our same telehealth tool to create continuity for the patient. Of course, internally, we prioritize the care and safety of our staff, making sure that they have all the tools that they need and support during this trying time. We've also kind of recently transitioned COVID testing to include influenza A and B for patients and staff, just to make sure that, you know, we can be preemptive in any quarantine that's necessary. Obviously, with flu, it's less than it is for COVID. That gives us, I think, more control over our response.
For sure. One thing that I feel we're constantly talking about is this idea of the cost of COVID-19. To switch gears a little bit here, providers are incurring higher than normal operation costs. What would you say has been the 2020 impact of the public health emergency on Common Spirit?
I would say the biggest impact that we have seen, of course, is our lost volume, particularly due to hospitals suspending elective surgeries back in the spring. The biggest impact was in states that did a kind of a statewide shutdown, states that did county-based shutdowns, predominantly, for example, in the Midwest, like Iowa, Nebraska. We didn't see a significant impact in volumes as we did in other locations. From a cost standpoint, we've seen increased spending for PPE, hazard pay, furloughs, lost productivity, and increased cost due to workers being in quarantine. And I would just say this is still kind of out related to the entire costs related to COVID as we continue to capture time spent preparing for COVID and implementing revised protocols and procedures and what that has meant to our organization since the pandemic started.
I want to stay on this topic a little bit more and ask you, is it harder to run a profitable business with these costs in mind?
Yes, it's definitely hard to stay profitable, losing volume and adding costs. You know, the increased costs, however, have not been as much of an issue as the drop in volume. We're conscious right now of the need to be a true partner to our health systems in you know, provide solutions to help decant and divert patients from the EDs and out of the hospital, and will likely incur additional costs associated with these programs now and into the future as we respond to the continued resurgence and however much time is still in front of us while we deal with the capacity issues in these hospitals. But, you know, we remain mindful of our responsibility to serve humanity and our partners and make the right decisions and choices now that could have a significant impact down the road. So not that we're reconciled to all of the additional costs involved, but we understand our responsibility and our role in that.
So we have seen, you know, some federal level support for home health providers. In your view, what measures have been, you know, significant, helpful during this time?
Well, I'd say definitely the biggest impact was the relief funding provided by the CARES Act. But I would add that the reporting requirements on it have been very vague and constantly changing, leading to lots of questions surrounding potential future liability. And the expansion of the accelerated Medicare payment program, you know, I'd say also provided short-term cash flow relief to providers. So I'd name those as the making the most significant difference during this time.
What else needs to happen, though, speaking at a federal level, to further support home health providers?
Well, if the HEAT Act gets passed, you know, that would go a long way to supporting our virtual care efforts that we've implemented because it was the right thing to do at the right time to do it. But we need that support and reimbursement going forward. You know, the ongoing challenges of PDGM that we still don't really have a lot of clean data around due to the pandemic, but you know, that's a continued challenge. But, you know, if PCR and the no-pay wrap were going to be delayed, that would be beneficial to us related to ongoing cash flow. And it would support us in being able to grow and continue caring for an ever-growing population that's in need of our care. I'm really grateful and supportive of the National Association of Home Care's NOCS efforts with the CHOOSE program and for SNF at Home specific reimbursement that they're advancing. And that may open up some avenues for us. You know, less regulation from my vantage point is always better.
We have officially winded down from the election. Do you have any hopes for the incoming administration? I'm thinking mostly kind of what measures should take place in order for providers to kind of really thrive in the coming years.
So this is intimately tied to your prior question. You know, I really am strongly an advocate to get this HEAT Act passed. Again, less regulation helps us thrive into the future. It appears maybe that the new administration will be pushing for universal healthcare coverage that may address some of the issues around social inequities in healthcare, which would be beneficial. And there's been some signs that there could be some bipartisan work that could speed up change. But right now, I think everything is unknown at this time.
What important lessons would you say you've learned because of the public health emergency? And I guess, how will these lessons shape future decisions on a leadership level at Common Spirit?
That's a great question. I think I would just start by naming, you know, a silver lining of the pandemic has been, you know, that we've been profoundly reminded that we were made for this, you know, our industry, home health and hospice, we were made for this. And we've been reminded through our actions that we were a pretty resilient and resourceful bunch. So, you know, I think as an industry, we've learned, you know, that we must be the architects who envision and implement post-pandemic solutions, continuing with, you know, supporting the surge and recovery cycles that have put tremendous stress on our health system. I would say as an organization, we've learned anew. It's not that we didn't know it all along, but we've learned anew that the agile and the swift change agents will survive and thrive. We've learned and been reminded of the power of teamwork that we always speak to, but I think really now have firsthand experience of what it really means. And, you know, together we can do anything that we put our minds and hearts to. I think we've We've learned about the heightened importance of the need to adapt and change quickly in an emergency situation, you know, and ensure thoughtful preparedness and innovation that will continue to drive greater efficiency and ensure safety. I think we've learned, again, we've known this, but we've learned it and experienced it in a different way, that real-time data-driven decision-making lends to our agility, and that business intelligence should and will continue to inform the evolution of our business model. I think as, you know, as leaders, we now have a better understanding that we can, we should, we will evolve and change quickly and effectively. And, you know, I think we're much better positioned to do so again and again and again as public health needs and our health system partners evolve in their own care delivery advancements and whatever we might be facing from a public health crisis in the future. You know, I don't think that this will be the last one. So I think we have cut our teeth on this pandemic that have, you know, it's shown us what we're really capable of. I also think, you know, we discuss as senior leaders in the organization that, you know, the diversification and the expansion of our services beyond traditional home care and hospice, you know, they're vital to mitigating the impact of volume decline in times of crisis. So that's really something that we had to work through and need to continue to work through in the midst of a crisis. I could go on and on. There have been so many, every moment presents itself with a learning that gives us different perspective and a lens to see through what we will do in the future differently. You know, we're much more forward windshield looking versus rear view mirror than we were ever in my career.
Lessons learned, I think, is kind of a perfect segue into my next question. It's the end of the year and it's the perfect time to look forward. What are some of Common Spirit's 2021 goals? Is there anything that you're focused on implementing or achieving next year?
Absolutely. One of the most pervasive goals going into 2021 is to increase our use of technology to, you know, remotely monitor more patients who are at high risk of rehospitalization. You know, and since seeing favorable early outcomes following our enterprise increase in the use of remote patient monitoring, you know, we do believe that increasing its use would lead to further reductions in avoidable rehospitalizations, improved outcomes, and obviously improved patient satisfaction. So our, you know, one of our top goals is to increase remote patient monitoring from about 5% right now of our census to a minimum of 8% in the first quarter of 2021. And I would say additionally, we've set targets for increasing the use of secure video conferencing technology. Since starting to use a combination of HRS video chat and Zoom conferencing this past spring, we have seen significant increase in its use in some of our locations, which has directly impacted our ability to care for more people through, you know, increased clinical optimization. And, you know, it really goes a long way to reduce infection risk for patients and clinical staff, as well as preserve scarce PPE. So that remains a top priority for us as well. So we'll continue to be focused around uniformly increasing video conferencing technology across all of our sites where clinically appropriate. And we're looking to improve that to at least 12% of our patient encounters, again, in the first quarter of 21. So adapting remote patient monitoring and other technology-enabled solutions, certainly in 2021, we'll continue our organizational business model focus, which is to expand our joint venture engagements and partnerships with home-based services with other health systems who are looking to improve existing capabilities or kind of develop new ones. It's a very strong hallmark of our business model that will continue to advance. I would also add, you know, we need to find creative ways that are lasting and meaningful to address and support the well-being and needs and the work-life balance for our associates. You know, working remotely poses different challenges, and certainly the new language and topic of the day around COVID fatigue and being zoomed out, et cetera. You know, it's just, these are experiences that we have not encountered before and need to really have solid strategies in place to address so that our most important resource is well cared for and can thrive through this time. Those are some of our top priorities going into the next calendar year as an organization. Of course, I'm going to just say beating COVID right up there at the top and, you know, trying to help our organization regain some sort of normalcy and absolutely continue to embrace all of the good change that's come from the pandemic and not lose sight of what we've gained as a result, not just what we've lost, but what we've gained, which has been substantial too.
I think we have a minute or two left before we come to a close. Is there anything else that you want to touch on?
I would just love to name how proud I am to be in this space and a part of an industry that continues to choose to sacrifice and be out in front and take care of people who need us most, who are most vulnerable in our society. You know, those who are disabled or aging or those who are dying. I'm really, really, really proud of how my team, of course, but our industry has responded. And I'm equally thrilled that we have a new place in at the table. We have a different heightened level of desired engagement from providers and hopefully more so with payers as well that we've longed for decades. And I'm really proud of how we've responded to our community health crisis and the needs of those we serve and, you know, how this will transform home-based care into the future. Lots to be really proud of.
For sure. Well, that's Trish Chrisman, the Vice President and COO of the Home Care and Hospice Division at Common Spirit Health at Home. Trish, this was an absolute pleasure. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Disrupt.
Thank you, Joyce. My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Disrupt. For more news and insight on the home health, home care, and hospice industries, subscribe to our daily or weekly newsletters at homehealthcarenews.com. I'm Joyce Fumakinwa, and this has been a production of Aging Media Network.